And according to my calculations, we were on question 12. That's what we want to do is finish up the questions for lesson 48. I wanted to look at some of the things about Paul's return journey to Jerusalem and then get on to lesson 49, which is entitled Paul's Imprisonments, or the Imprisonment of Paul. All right, so we were, as I say, we're looking at the questions for lesson 48, Paul's third journey. And so as we went through here, we had finished these questions as we went through and got to question 12. I think we discussed this. And so the thing is that we're looking at Paul's stay mostly in this area, and at what city? It was a lengthy stay at, not hearing anything, Ephesus. All right. How long was that stay at Ephesus, approximately?
3 years.
3 years or more, yeah. I believe it's in 1st or 2nd Corinthians that he actually mentions the time that he was there as being 3 years. just an approximate number, but... Was it Acts 20?
Yeah, I believe it's reviewing, I think verse
31. Oh, okay. Acts 20 and verse 31. Oh, yeah, that's right. Oh, when he was talking to the elders. That's right. Okay, so 20 and 31, he says, "Wherefore watch ye, remembering that by the space of 3 years I ceased not to admonish everyone night and day with tears." So I am of the opinion of that Paul says that he was there for 3 years, that he was most likely there for 3 years or so. So it's interesting to note, as you read through commentaries and different books and things like that, and they'll say, well, Paul was there for 2 years, and Paul was there for, you know, a little over 2 years, and Paul says he was there for 3 years. So I have a tendency not to doubt Paul. All right, so as we've gone through this, we've looked, and actually I wanted to do something before I got into this, and let me see if I can do it, and it'll forgive my... changing of video modes here. Given that this is a study of the history and geography of the Bible story, I wanted us to all make sure that we understand where we are. Of course, I think all of us all recognize where we are in the Western Hemisphere, in the United States, of course. I've got all sorts of little map pins in here, but one of these right here where the little arrowhead is in the desert is where Lancaster is. So, as a matter of fact, if I were to zoom in on there, you'd see that I have us marked there in the church building. So, but when we look at the geography of where we are right now, and if I head over here to the Bible lands, you'll see, of course, that I'm turning the world halfway around here, as we come in here and look at what I've called the Bible lands. It's a close view, of course, and of course it doesn't take into account all the lands of the Bible. So if we zoom out a bit, we'll be in better orientation as to where we can look at where we are right now. So when we look at the area that we discuss, we see that the area that we discuss most is actually probably the smallest area that we have on this map. I mean, this little land of Israel right here, between this little body of water right here, which is what? What is that little body of water right there? Sea of Galilee. And what's this bigger body of water right here? Dead Sea. And you can see right there the Jordan River flowing right between them.
Oh, yeah.
Clearly. Yeah, clearly. Yeah. So if we were to zoom in on the land that takes most of our time in the Bible, we realize that it has to do with this land of Israel, sort of bordered, as it were, by the Sea of Galilee on the north and the Dead Sea on the south. Of course, Israel at various times throughout its history, of course, was in control of much larger areas than this. But when we zoom out a bit, we realize that we're still staying over in the eastern area of this ocean here, which is which ocean or sea?
Mediterranean.
Mediterranean. Sea, is it called? Mediterranean Sea. Okay. Anyway, And we have a couple of important islands in here. What island is this?
Cyprus.
Cyprus, right. Which island is this one? That's Crete. I'm pretty sure that's Crete. There's Italia over there, so yeah, I believe Sicily is this guy here. And which one is this one? This little one. That's one we'll take up in this next chapter.
Malta.
It's now called Malta. What do they call it in the Bible? Melita, I believe it was called. Not Miletus, but Melita. So that's the one that they ran aground. I say I've given away all the story of chapter 49 already, see? All the exciting part. But as we were looking earlier in our study of the history and geography of the Bible story, we realized that that we had this area here. Once again, we have Israel down here. We have this whole area here, which at this time is called what? This area here. Today is called what?
Turkey.
All right. And so, yeah, is the term Asia Minor is used, right, in the book of Revelation, I believe. No, it's just the seven churches of Asia, right? I think Asia Minor is just our term, right? Our term, okay. So, it just says the seven churches of Asia. So, which are in Asia, but at that time, in the Roman way of things, Asia was just this area right here. It's not what we would call Asia today. It's part of what we would call perhaps Asia Minor, but then that takes care of all of this area over here is what we call Asia Minor, I think. but the seven churches of Asia were right here in this area. Not too far from what town that we're studying right now? First church of Revelation chapter 2 is Ephesus, okay? So the seven churches of Asia that are mentioned in the book of Revelation in chapters 2 and 3 start here at Ephesus, wherever Ephesus is. And they just sort of go in a circle around here, where it would have made a quite an interesting preaching tour. Okay, but anyway, I didn't want to get into that kind of detail at this time. But anyway, as Mickey says, we're chasing a rabbit here. What, Bruce?
It says the seven churches which are in Asia.
The seven churches which are in Asia. Okay, and. So if we looked at a biblical map of this, we would see that we've got Asia here, we've got Galatia over here, Phrygia down here somewhere, Syria in this area, and a number of other places. Where's Macedonia? Right up here, right? And then what do we have down here?
Achaia.
So as a matter of fact, the commentary that I was reading on the book of Acts indicates that the use of the word Greece and the use of the word Achaia were sort of intermingled. If you said Greece, you were meaning Achaia anyway. Apparently, if you said Greece, you weren't necessarily meaning Macedonia. so, be that as it may. So, this country right here is what we call today what? Greece. Okay. And what is this area of the Mediterranean here called? The Aegean Sea. So that's where we are right now. Now, what we've done in looking at Paul's third journey here is Paul started off from where? Antioch of Syria, which is right about in this area right here. And then he went through first strengthening the churches of Galatia, and it's the first couple of blanks in your lesson book. Galatia and Phrygia, that's right. Yeah. No, we don't want to jump from Galatia to Macedonia too quickly. We'd need an airplane to do that. So he went through here, strengthening the churches. He started off here and went around and strengthened the churches of of Galatia and Phrygia, which are in this area right here. And so when we think about the area of Galatia, what major churches do we think about? About four of them. Pardon? Antioch of Pisidia. And then? Iconium. Okay, all right here in this area right here. And then he went on over here to Ephesus, wherever that is over there. But later on, as we look at the third journey, he continues on up here to what town up here? Troas. And he goes then across this little bit of the Aegean by boat, apparently, and lands here at where? Philippi, right. And there's another couple of churches in the area of Philippi, which are what? Thessalonica and Berea. All right. As far as we know, those are the only churches that are named until we get down here to where? Not yet. Athens. And then we go across the Isthmus. Isthmus? Anyway. Yeah, right. To what town over here? Corinth. And then the port city of Corinth was what was called what? Right about in there? Cenchrea. And so when we were looking at Paul's return journey from the city of Corinth on the third journey, it appeared that he was getting ready to take a ship from Cenchrea and head back home, which home would have been where for him? Antioch of Syria, the sort of the home church, you might say. It's where that was the congregation from which he was dispatched. or from which he left. And Paul's childhood home is up here in Tarsus. I forget what the name of the province is that's there, whether that's Phrygia or not. But of course, but is what?
Cilicia.
Okay, yeah. but Paul was part of the congregation of Antioch. Perhaps I should get back to the questions. Maybe we're going to run into this here. And we'll look at that. All right. Oh. All right. So I probably actually covered most of the answers to most of the questions that we've got here anyway. But so we've spent our time at Ephesus, which I pointed out on the map, the general vicinity of. So we realize that we're not in the area of Canaan, Palestine, Israel, but we're rather up in the area of what we refer to nowadays as Asia Minor or Turkey. And we're in Ephesus. Paul's going to be there for 3 years. But at Ephesus, he met a nice guy who made shrines of the goddess Diana. And who was that?
Alexander.
Who?
Alexander.
Demetrius
is better. Yeah. So I can understand. They start with the same letter. So, yeah. I'm trying to think here. Apollos was from the city of Alexandria, so that's where, and he was at Ephesus from time to time. So, so there was a guy there named Demetrius who was sounds like he was sort of the shop steward, if you know what unions are. He was the one that sort of riled all the manufacturers up that were the ones that sold the idols for Diana. What was the other name for Diana?
Artemis.
Okay, so there's a Greek and a Roman name. I think this one is the Roman name. Anyway, so there's a fairly lengthy discussion about Demetrius and the silversmiths, that's what they were. I couldn't come up with the word. Demetrius and the silversmiths, where whoops, I'm way too far. Where they had a real problem with Paul and his cohorts upsetting the entire world, and says that they've turned almost all of Asia against the worship of Diana. And so they started yelling and screaming and went into their theater. Went into their theater and just started yelling and shouting and asking for people to be brought for judgment and things like that. The people that were with Paul encouraged him not to go into the stadium that, as Mickey mentioned a couple of weeks ago, was so big that it could hold how many people? I think he said 25,000, but if you find something different than that, let me know. I think that's the number he used. So, pretty good size theater that would have been used for plays and things like that. I'm not sure that I see any indication in Ephesus that they used this for things like they did in Rome, where they would, you know, put gladiators in there and sacrifice people to animals and stuff like this. I think it was a theater. The Romans and the Greeks were big on theater, and they would use the theater apparently for their public assemblies. If we look at the pictures of Ephesus now, you'll remember the picture of the big arc of seats on the hillside coming down into a bowl, and the picture that Mickey showed, of course, showed the people that were way far off, so they're really small as they were standing by the bottom there. But I think that's pretty much what it was. I don't think it was a complete bowl. It was just an arc like some of the theaters that we have down in Los Angeles that are built in a hillside. They just got this arc of seats, and then that makes things easier to hear, so that when they put on plays and have public things going on down there, the people can hear everything. I don't believe it was a coliseum like they had in Rome, where they could fill it up with water and have sea battles, and they could let lions and tigers and bears loose and have fun with people, I'm sure, is what they considered it to be. All right. Now this one, I don't think anybody's going to get. What letter did Paul write to the church at Ephesus? That is a tough one, is it not? Let's go with Ephesians, and you can look in Ephesians chapter 1 and verse 1 and see that the letter that was written to Ephesus was called the letter of Ephesians. So,
think he was asking, while he was at Ephesus, what other letters did he write? And I thought maybe it was...
Yeah, we covered that. Previously. Yeah, we covered that up in 10 already. there's a couple of questions similar to this throughout there. I should have just left it out, I guess, but... Anyway, so, and we already discussed this. Now, after the riot, as it were, with the silversmiths, and they got everybody together, and they went into the theater, and were yelling and screaming and everything like that. What did the city clerk tell these people?
An unlawful ecclesia,
right? Yeah. So the Greek word ekklesia, of course, ek meaning, I forget it now. I mean, anyway, it means called out of. I can't break it down. It was a compound word, ek and ekklesia. is used mostly in the New Testament to refer to what?
Church.
Mostly used to refer to the church. But it does talk simply about a body of people that are called out essentially for a specific purpose. And in this instance, the assembly, the unlawful assembly by the people at Ephesus, was referred to by the city clerk as an ecclesia. In other words, people called out for a purpose of getting together and going to the theater and yelling and screaming. Apparently, he considered people gathering themselves together in the theater and yelling and screaming and trying to beat up people not a lawful assembly. And so he dismissed the assembly, he said, it says. And so... At that time, Paul does what? Finds some other place to go. And so he had already determined several verses back that he was going to go into Macedonia and continue on through. Now, remember that he's doing what as he goes through on this third journey? He's taking up something or collecting something.
Collecting funds.
It turns out that this one is for the church at Jerusalem. The one earlier is for the one for the churches in Judea. That's much earlier than this. So this one is specifically for the church at Jerusalem. So I misspoke myself last time when I said that this one was for the churches of Judea. But as I read through further, I see that this one is just for the church at Jerusalem. So the church at Jerusalem, the people there were having problems in the church, apparently, in Jerusalem, did not have the wherewithal to take care of them all themselves. Now, the church at Jerusalem could have been as large as how big? I mean, what was the last number that we saw early in the book of Acts? We saw 3,000 first, and then we saw the 5,000. And so the church in Jerusalem was huge. I mean, I don't think any of us know of any congregations of the Lord's church that are anywhere near that area. So even though this was a big city, it was the capital of the Jewish nation and all that sort of stuff, and it's where the church started, they had a congregation that was bigger, really, than they could take care of if there came to be a problem. And apparently there was something to do with famine or the people needed things. What was one of the considerations that we thought about in Acts chapter 2-ish when the church was established, that why there would be, after Acts chapter 2, why there would be problems immediately with the Jerusalem church as far as people being able to take care of themselves?
Okay.
We realized that a lot of people had come to Jerusalem for Pentecost, right? And it turns out that this Pentecost was sort of a special this Pentecost was one that everybody came to. So there are a lot of people that came to Jerusalem. And at this time, then the church was established and a lot of preaching went on. And so, Randy?
I was just going to say a lot of people came for Passover and stuck around for Pentecost.
Right, that's right.
50 days later.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is that the Passover at that time, what major event happened at that Passover?
Crucifixion.
Crucifixion of Jesus. This also happened to coincide, and I don't believe that it always does, with the Sabbath day. This Passover. And I think there was something about that. I think that that's not necessarily the case, that the Passover and the Sabbath happen on the same day. I'm not sure how we calculate when the Passover occurs. But so then 50 days later, there was the Feast of Pentecost, one of the prescribed feasts of the Jewish law. And people had come there, and they had come expecting to stay perhaps for this 50 days between Passover and Pentecost. But then the gospel was preached there in Acts chapter 2, and a lot of people believed. At that time, we have the number 3,000, right? At the end of the second chapter of Acts, we see that there are about 3,000 people discussed right there. Well, I have a feeling that some or many of these people, of this 3,000, were people that had come from somewhere expecting only to stay for 50 days. And perhaps they had made arrangements for that, but were not considering that they were going to stay longer or maybe even permanently now that the church was established there, now that they have brethren in this city. And so that's why there came to be problems with the church in Jerusalem right away as far as being able to take care of their own people went. It's because all of a sudden there's a massive number of people, many of whom perhaps didn't plan to stay more than the 50 days between Passover and Pentecost. So we had a lot of people there. And then, of course, just a couple of chapters later, it mentions that the number of men grew to be 5,000. Randy?
Leviticus 23:5 says, in the first month of the 14th day of the month, at twilight is the Lord's Passover.
Oh, that's right. So in the first day, the 14th day of the month, at twilight, at twilight is when Passover begins. So that's not necessarily on a Sabbath day. And so I don't know what, you know, how special this was, but some commentators have made comment about the fact that the Passover and the Sabbath happened on to coincide at this particular time. I guess that made it particularly special for some of the people. I'm not sure. what import that has, I don't know. But perhaps it drew more people to Jerusalem than would on a just not regular old, you know, Passover day.
The original point was that how much relief was being brought to the church in Jerusalem and how big it was. But we actually don't know how big it was. You know, it mentions 5,000, but in Acts chapter 8, we know a lot of those 5,000 scattered.
Yes, they did. They did scatter. That's right.
So we really don't know how big that congregation was.
Right, because it says they were all scattered abroad except for the apostles. I think if we're thinking of the same passage. I do note that when it does mention the 5,000, it mentions 5,000 men. So if we, you know, we take the normal thing and think that, well, that means there may have been 10,000 people or maybe even 15,000 people for all we know. But yes, the scriptures do say very close to the persecution of by Saul. So that would have been in chapters 7, 6, something like that. It says they were scattered abroad.
Was that actually 8-2?
8-2, right. Just right after the long chapter 7. Yeah. Carolyn?
This is purely speculation, but along those same lines, those who remained, if they continued to be persecuted or had been stripped of property or anything, they might even be in, you know, more dire straits than they had previously.
That's true. I mean, the people that actually lived in Jerusalem or in the vicinities and had lands or houses or, you know, there, they certainly may have been persecuted. Yes, and that's one of the things that, of course, Mickey pointed out a number of lessons ago was that who were the first persecutors of the church? You know, a lot of people think, well, the Romans really persecuted the church, but who persecuted them first? The Jews did, right? Because they, pardon? Including Paul, that's right. So up until, or who was otherwise called Saul, or Paul, or Saul. So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. So we were actually on Paul's third journey, right? That's what we were talking about before I started running around. And I think I brought this up because, you know, we're talking about Paul leaving Ephesus and traveling to what city. We realize that Paul is on this journey and the purpose of his journey, to a large sense, other than preaching the gospel, is to take up a collection for the needy saints in Jerusalem. So when Paul left Ephesus, he went to, and we've already discussed this, he went to Troas. So he just essentially went up the coast a ways. He's been to Troas before. He went there on the second journey, and when he was forbidden to preach where? In Asia, and also in, not in, what? Did you say Mexico? Bithynia. He was called over to Macedonia, and what we refer to as the Macedonian call. The Holy Spirit did not permit him to preach at that time in Asia or in Bithynia, which is up to the north and east of Asia. All right. Now, excuse me. So Paul gets there to Troas. We can see that spoken about in 2 Corinthians 2:12. If we look at just the story as it goes on in the book of Acts, we see that Paul was going to go to Macedonia and he went to Macedonia. That's all it says. So we have to go to 1st and 2nd Corinthians to get more detail about his travels here regarding this. So after he went, he traveled to what city? Traveled to Troas. And who did he hope he would find there that was going to bring him news from Corinth regarding the first Corinthian letter that he had sent?
Titus.
Okay. So Titus, he was hoping to find there. The same place in 2 Corinthians in chapter 2 and verse 12 is where you'll find the mention that Paul had hoped to find Titus there. But he didn't, right? So Paul was rather discouraged at that time because he was really hoping that the letter that he wrote to the church at Corinth would have a positive impact and that he would have a report back from Titus by the time that he left to go to Macedonia. In this instance, apparently, Titus had not yet made it back. Or could have been waiting for him in Macedonia, because what does Paul do next? He goes to Macedonia. All right, so Paul then, after not finding Titus, he went over to Macedonia, and what letter did he write there? 2 Corinthians. Why did he write 2 Corinthians?
He found Titus.
Found Titus. So Titus turned up somewhere. It doesn't say where, but there were, of course, we know of a number of congregations there in Macedonia, and most likely there were more than just the one, two, three, what is it, three or four that are mentioned in Macedonia. Three, I think it is. You know, because when we talk about the title of the book of Acts, how many times do we lengthen that title of the book of Acts? Mickey's mentioned it a couple of times. The book of Acts is the book of some of the Acts of some of the apostles. Right. Yeah. So when we say that the book of Acts is some of the Acts of some of the apostles, some of the Acts of some of the evangelists actually also, we realize that not everything, the Holy Spirit has not seen fit to give us a minute-by-minute account of everything that happened for years on end here. The book of Acts encompasses a time of probably 20 years, I think, the entire book, at least. The journeys of Paul take up how much time? About 10 years. I don't know if we've brought that. I think it's in one of our lessons somewhere regarding that. So anyway, Paul went to Macedonia and he met up with Titus. Titus brought him what kind of news regarding the church of Corinth and their reception of the letter that he wrote?
Great news.
Great news, yeah. Paul just, as we say in today's parlance, wrote him up in every chapter in 1 Corinthians, for all 16 chapters, as it were, of 1 Corinthians, and he was hoping that they would take that well and that they would correct themselves. And as we discussed a couple of sessions ago, what did they do?
They repented.
They repented, right. So they were struck with sorrow, right? But what kind of sorrow?
Godly
sorrow that leads to repentance. And Paul was just overjoyed to hear that. Now, that didn't take care of, apparently, of every problem that he had discussed or that the church at Corinth had, because we realize that in 2 Corinthians there's still a few problems that he needs to address. But a lot of 2 Corinthians has to do with his being thankful for the fact that they repented of the things that they were doing and were turning to God and becoming the faithful Christians that he certainly wanted them to be. Okay, next page. So, now, the text of the scriptures uses a particular term here. So, the Jews plotted against Paul during the 3 months that he stayed in what region?
Greece.
It says Greece, and you can see that in Acts 20 and 2. However, when you start looking at the fact that the book of Romans appears to have been written from the city of Corinth, and some of the things that are discussed in 1 and 2 Corinthians, it appears that when we're talking about Greece, we're mostly talking about the fact that he was in Corinth. He said he was going to return to them. He was concerned about the reception of both of his letters to them. So it's most reasonable for us to think that when it says that he went to Greece, that he was mostly in Corinth. But I think perhaps maybe the Holy Spirit is trying to tell us he didn't spend all his time in Corinth. But you notice that it doesn't mention anything about going to Athens or anything like that. But we know that there were a number of people there in Athens. Oh, I already gave it away. At Corinth, Paul wrote what letter? Romans. Okay. So we can gather that from Romans, the 15th chapter, and in verses 24 and following. So if you look at Romans 15 and 24 and following, you'll see that, that we can conclude from that that Paul was at Corinth when he wrote the book of Romans. On Paul's return trip, who joined him in Philippi? Luke. How do we know? Pronouns change. Once again, let me point out that a lot of people, when we're discussing things about the Bible, will say that you're making mountains out of molehills. But we can look at the scriptures here and see that just by the change of pronoun from third person to first person, is that correct? From they to we? Is that right?
Third person plural and first person plural.
Okay. Yeah, right. So when the writer goes and changes his pronouns from they to we can see something about that. And it's not some sort of molehill. It's something that's important. And we need to keep that in mind just in a general nature. John?
Jesus did the same thing when he made the argument, I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, not the God of the dead, but of the living.
Okay.
I am, not I was.
That's right. That's right. So, yeah, it's important because that he said, I am, not, as you say, I was, or something else. So that's one of the things I think that we need to consider very important, is that the Holy Spirit has caused these people to write down what? Just their random thoughts? The words that God wanted them to write down. So when Luke said we, he meant we. He didn't mean they. That means that he was on the journey with them. And when he said they, it means that he wasn't with them. And we see the pronouns change at Philippi. And at that time we realize that Luke, the writer of the book of Acts, now rejoins the party. Randy?
I think the importance of knowing that Luke was a traveling companion of Paul is because it's necessarily inferred that Paul laid his hands on him so that he would have the miraculous gift of knowledge.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, we wouldn't have the book of Luke or Acts.
That's true, yeah. Luke writing both Luke of all things and Acts.
Because Luke was not an apostle.
No, he was not an apostle.
Mark was also a traveling companion of Paul.
Yeah, yeah. And I believe we'll find as Paul makes his trip to Rome that Luke is with him also. So makes quite the journey there along with Paul. I believe the pronouns indicate that also. All right. all right. So we were at Corinth. So Paul left Ephesus, went through Macedonia, all the way around, down to Greece, and probably to Corinth, wrote the book of Romans. He was going to come back across the ocean and go back to Antioch, or probably down to Jerusalem, because he had this bounty that he needed to carry. Why did he decide to take the land route? Yeah, the Jews had laid another plot to kill him. This first one? No. The first one was when he was at Damascus, right? They were looking out for him to kill him. So this is then is the second one. And then later on, there's two more after he's arrested in Jerusalem. There's two more plots to kill him. Anyway, Paul's life apparently is worth a lot to them. He goes back up to Philippi, transitions across from Macedonia back into Asia, and meets with the disciples on the first day of the week at what city?
Troas,
once again. Acts 20 and in that area, Acts 20 and 7. As I mentioned last week, what authority did we take from Acts 20 and 7 in that area? Say what?
The frequency of the Lord's Supper.
The frequency of the Lord's Supper, and also the day of the week. Okay? Because it says, upon the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul discoursed with them, intending to depart on the morrow, and delayed his speech until midnight. So we see right there that they have the Lord's Supper, that it was on the first day of the week, and we realize that there is a first day of the week almost every week. Yeah. Every week. So so Paul continues journeying on down, and from Troas he gets in a ship, and they're going down several other places, and his ship pulls in at Miletus. Now, from Miletus, for whom did Paul call from Ephesus to meet with him? The elders of the church. How far was it from Miletus to Ephesus? 30-something miles, right. So that would have taken at least 2 days to walk, something like that. So we can probably be assured the ship was there for maybe a week or something like that, because people had to go up there, had to bring them back, and then Paul spoke with. Why didn't he go to Ephesus?
It would take too much time.
He didn't want to be delayed on his journey getting back to Jerusalem, because he wanted to be there by Pentecost, I think it was. Anyway, but he had a mission to get back to Jerusalem anyway, and he wanted to be there by a particular time. So Paul admonished the elders of Ephesus to teach the church properly and to warn against what? False teachers. Okay. So in Acts 20 and 30, we see that. after leaving Miletus, Paul concluded his journey. That's a quick trip right there. He actually stopped at a lot of places, and we see a number of other things mentioned in his trip. But Paul concluded his journey and eventually arrived back at what city? Why? For that too. What was his purpose, one of his purposes in this journey that he made? Right. To bring an offering to the folks at Jerusalem, the needy saints at Jerusalem. So that was one of the things that he did. But in Acts 21:17, you'll see that not only did he arrive at Jerusalem, but who welcomed him heartily? The brethren, the saints that were there. Okay. So on Wednesday, we will proceed right on into chapter 49, lesson 49.